This is Audible.
A Brief History of Misogyny, the World's Oldest Prejudice, by Jack Holland. Read by Cameron Stewart. Foreword by Jack Holland's daughter. My father loved history, and he loved women. These are the two factors that brought him to the topic of misogyny, one substantially different from the Northern Irish political matters on which he had built a career. He began work on misogyny, the world's oldest prejudice, in 2002. The topic was quite a conversation starter. A common response from other men, when my father told them what he was working on, was an assumption that he was writing some sort of defence of misogyny, a reaction he found startling. Another common response was surprise that such a book should be written by a man. To this, his answer was simple. Why not, he would say. It was invented by men. While he was writing, he became consumed by the astonishing list of crimes committed against women by their husbands, fathers, neighbours, and rulers. My mother and I would shudder as he recounted them, from the mind-boggling torture of suspected witches in early modern Europe to the horrendous cruelty suffered by women in North Korean prisons. He clipped newspaper articles. He read myriad histories. He turned to poetry and plays in an attempt to find cultural explanations. My father felt that this was his most important work. In it, he turned his journalist's eye to a daunting question. How do you explain the oppression and brutalization of half the world's population by the other half throughout history? The tools he used in tackling that question were the same ones he employed to make other more contemporary conflicts tangible to his readers. His ability to condense difficult, inaccessible material, his considerable knowledge of Western culture and history, his sympathy for the oppressed, and his lyrical prose style. With these at his disposal, he created a history which, despite its often brutal subject matter, is remarkably pleasurable to read. In March 2004, a month after he finished Misogyny, my father was diagnosed with cancer. He died that May of NKT cell lymphoma, an extremely rare form of cancer that is almost always fatal. Although weakened by illness and treatment, he remained absorbed by the project and continued working on the final edits while in his hospital bed. The father-daughter relationship occupies an important place in this book, for it is in this most intimate of connections that misogyny's pernicious effects are carried forward or broken. It is also a central relationship in any girl's life, and as a father, mine approached his parental role with lightness, admiring without fawning, accepting the arrival of my womanhood with grace and tactful approval. Most of all, he always asked me for my thoughts. He encouraged me to be argumentative, to challenge him. Occasionally, he would chuckle and poke fun at my youthful convictions. Other times, our debates would become quite heated. I knew from what he said that he prized my intelligence. I knew from the soft look in his eyes that he cherished my womanliness. It is difficult to measure the importance of that acceptance, especially now that it is gone. As I read what my father wrote about the treatment that so many women have endured for centuries and across continents, I become aware of an irony. I was spared the effects of misogyny. Exceptionally, I was able to live, at least at home, free from its shackles. My most tender memory of my father, out of a lifetime of tender memories, is from 3 days before he died. He and I were sitting alone in one of the patient lounges of a Manhattan hospital, going through the manuscript together. I read aloud, and he wanted to know if I had any suggested changes. I was flattered that he, professional author, expert, adult, father, was asking me, newbie reporter, expert on nothing, young woman, daughter, for my opinion. It was a golden moment, now burnished by recollection. It felt as though the quiet task we were engaged in was greater than his illness. In the sun-drenched room where we sat overlooking the Hudson River, for a brief moment we were keeping at bay the suffering and fear that surrounded us in that cancer ward. We were not long at our task when I realized that my father's doctor, a kind, soft-spoken man who barely 2 weeks earlier had informed my mother and me that my father's death was imminent, was standing by watching us, clearly moved. His expression told me that he did not see scenes like this very often. Jack grew up in Northern Ireland in the 1950s and came of age in the socially and politically turbulent 1960s. From early on, he was surrounded by capable women. He was raised primarily by his grandmother, Kate Murphy Holland, a formidable matriarch from the wilds of County Down, and his aunt, Sissy Martha Holland, a woman of considerable beauty who never married and worked in one of Belfast's many linen mills. His own mother, Elizabeth Rogers Holland, grew up so poor that she could afford to attend school only sporadically. She would serve as an inspiration to him throughout his career. He used to say that his aim as a writer was to give people like her, uneducated but endowed with intelligence, access to complex ideas. He was always concerned with the female experience. When he came to write his first non-fiction account of the Troubles, then at their height, he mined the letters and stories of his mother and aunt and used them to great effect in Too Long a Sacrifice, Life and Death in Northern Ireland Since 1969, published in 1981. His first novel, The Prisoner's Wife, 1982, explored the suffering endured by women when men engage in war. The most important woman in my father's life was my mother, Mary Hudson, a formidable intellect in her own right and a gifted linguist and teacher. They enjoyed a productive and happy 30-year marriage, invaluable to each other both personally and professionally. Growing up, I was privy to countless discussions at the dinner table about how to develop this or that aspect of whatever book he was writing at the time. Misogyny, as well as most of his other books, was improved by her editing. Without her perseverance over the last 2 years, this book would have never seen the light of day. The U.S. publisher with whom my father had a contract, and with whom he had closely collaborated throughout the writing process, oddly claimed, after his death, that the manuscript was not publishable. My mother knew this was untrue, and was determined that a home for the book should be found, because it was a story that had to be told. It is because of her resilience that this important and thought-provoking work will now reach its audience. We now live in an age that is relatively enlightened, when finally the phenomenon of misogyny has been identified not only as a source of oppression and injustice, but also as an obstacle to human development and to social and economic progress. Yet on the whole, women continue to be paid less than their male counterparts, and in the United States, reproductive rights won decades ago are being eroded. True sexual equality still eludes us. And in many parts of the world, where issues of gender are compounded by poverty, ignorance, fundamentalism, and disease, women's lot has scarcely improved over the centuries. Jack Holland, my father, was acutely aware that such problems could not be solved by a single book, or indeed by many. But this book, his last, shall stand as an important tool in the struggle against the world's oldest prejudice.